In a world that often celebrates extraordinary achievement, Andrew Sean Greer's Pulitzer Prize-winning novel Less offers a refreshing counterpoint, a celebration of beautiful mediocrity. The novel follows Arthur Less, a self-described minor novelist approaching 50, as he embarks on a global journey to escape attending his ex-boyfriend's wedding. What begins as simple avoidance transforms into a profound meditation on aging, love, and self-acceptance. Since winning the 2018 Pulitzer Prize for Fiction, Less has become a cultural touchstone, praised by critics and celebrities alike, including former President Barack Obama, who listed it among his favorite books. Through gentle humor and poignant observation, Greer crafts a story that resonates deeply with readers navigating their own midlife uncertainties, proving that sometimes the most extraordinary journeys are those that lead us back to ourselves. Arthur Less stands before us as a man uniquely vulnerable in a hardened world, like a person without skin, having developed only the transparent carapace of a soft-shelled crab by middle age. This fundamental sensitivity shapes every interaction and decision throughout his journey. While technology has conquered some fears, his heart remains perpetually exposed to love's wounds. This vulnerability explains his 9-year relationship with Freddie Palou, the son of his former nemesis Carlos, and his 15 years with the renowned poet Robert Brownburn before that. Less navigates the world with an innocence that others shed decades ago, making him both endearing and frustrating. He lacks the protective edge most developed to survive life's disappointments, making each rejection, whether personal or professional, cut deeper than it might for others. When we first meet him, Less sits anxiously in a New York hotel lobby, mistaken for a woman writer named Miss Arthur, perhaps the only genuine compliment his writing has received. With his washed-out blonde hair, watery blue eyes, and perpetually sunburned nose, he appears faded, like the lobby sofa beneath him. His literary career mirrors this fading, once promising, now relegated to the margins of relevance. This sensitivity extends beyond his personal relationships to his professional identity. When his publisher rejects his latest manuscript, Less feels not just professional disappointment, but existential crisis. His writing, like his heart, comes from this unprotected place, authentic but perhaps too vulnerable for a world that demands armor. The question that haunts him throughout his journey is whether this vulnerability is a fatal flaw or his greatest strength. What makes Less compelling is not exceptional talent or remarkable achievements, but this very ordinariness coupled with extraordinary sensitivity. In a literary landscape filled with exceptional protagonists, Less offers something more relatable, the courage to continue feeling deeply in a world that punishes such openness. His journey becomes not about becoming exceptional, but about finding value in being exactly who he is. The catalyst for Arthur Less's global odyssey arrives in the form of an elegant invitation to Freddie Palou's wedding. After 9 comfortable years together, their relationship had ended when Freddie announced he was seeing someone who wanted monogamy. Now, months later, Less faces an impossible choice: attend the wedding and endure awkwardness, or decline and invite ridicule. His solution? Create a third option by accepting every international invitation he's received, crafting an escape route that will conveniently make him unavailable. Their relationship began at a Memorial Day party in 1987, where Carlos introduced them despite the long-standing rivalry between Less and himself. What started as weekend visits evolved into comfortable routine, with Freddie eventually receiving a key to Less's home. Neither fell deeply in love, but they enjoyed each other's company. Freddie, partly to annoy his father Carlos, Less because Freddie offered uncomplicated companionship amid his many failed relationships with age-appropriate men. The wedding invitation forces Less to confront not just the end of this relationship, but his approaching 50th birthday and his status as the first homosexual ever to grow old. Having lost most of his generation to AIDS, he lacks models for aging as a gay man. Should he cling to youth or embrace maturity? Should he marry, take lovers, or let sexuality fade away? These questions haunt him as he prepares for his journey. What begins as avoidance becomes something more profound, a quest for identity. Each destination on his itinerary represents not just physical distance from the wedding, but psychological distance from his fears. New York, Mexico City, Turin, Berlin, Paris, Morocco, India, and Japan become stations in his emotional journey, each offering new perspectives on his central questions about love, aging, and purpose. The wedding invitation serves as both escape hatch and invitation to transformation. By fleeing what he cannot face, Les inadvertently creates space to confront deeper truths. His physical journey around the world becomes the external manifestation of an internal journey towards self-understanding. The irony, which Les doesn't yet recognize, is that sometimes we must travel thousands of miles to discover what's been waiting at home all along. Robert Brownburn haunts Les's journey like a literary phantom. Though physically absent from most of the narrative, the renowned poet's influence permeates every aspect of Les's identity. Their 15-year relationship, which began when Les was just 21 and Brownburn was significantly older, shaped Les's understanding of love, art, and his own worth. Their first meeting on a San Francisco beach in 1987 captures the dynamic that would define their relationship. Young Arthur, naked and sunburned, encounters Robert and his wife Marion. When Marion asks Les to accompany Robert swimming, saying, "Take care of my Robert," she unknowingly foreshadows the transfer of responsibility that would occur by spring when Les and Robert would be living together. Life with Brownburn meant life with doubt. Doubt in morning coffee, in avoiding eye contact during breaks, in the sound of the door opening and closing without goodbye. Yet somehow, within that uncertain space, beauty emerged. Poetry every day, a novel every few years. Les recalls peeking into Robert's room while he was out, searching through trash, examining the typewriter's half-written pages, terrified to discover if he was the subject. The relationship ended as it began, with Robert making a unilateral decision. After 15 years, sensing their relationship was fading with infidelities and diminished joy, Robert called to say, "Arthur, I love you, but I will not be coming home." Like finishing Proust's In Search of Lost Time, it ended abruptly with unexpected finality. Throughout his journey, Les struggles with Robert's ghost, not just memories of their relationship, but the shadow of Robert's literary genius. When academic Harold Van Dervander, the head, in Mexico, probes Les about living with genius Brownburn, Les confronts the disparity between Robert's celebrated work and his own mediocre novels. This comparison haunts him at every literary event, where he's often valued more for his connection to Brownburn than for his own writing. The relationship's echo appears most powerfully when Les receives news of Robert's stroke while in Japan. Their video call reveals Robert aged and diminished, but still philosophical, telling Les that at 50, he shouldn't worry about being too old. 50 is nothing. I look back at 50 and think, what the fuck was I so worried about? This perspective from the other side of aging offers Les a glimpse of liberation from his fears. Robert Brownburn represents both Les's greatest love and his greatest insecurity, the standard against which he measures himself and inevitably falls short. Only by confronting this ghost can Les begin to see himself not as Robert's lesser companion, but as worthy in his own right. Throughout his global odyssey, Les confronts his greatest fear, that he is, professionally speaking, nothing special. This anxiety crystallizes during his panel in Mexico City when the head's backstage comment about mediocrity loops endlessly in his mind. Is he, as Finley Dwyer once suggested at the Wild and Stein Literary Laurels, merely an assimilationist who writes like straight people, makes gay characters suffer, and sets stories in a nostalgic past? Les's literary career exists in an uncomfortable middle ground. Neither spectacular failure nor remarkable success. His novel Calypso received some recognition, but never achieved the acclaim of Robert's work. When his publisher rejects his latest manuscript, the family that welcomed him 15 years ago effectively disowns him. His new work, about a middle-aged gay man walking around San Francisco with his sorrows, elicits skepticism, even from sympathetic readers like Zora, who questions why anyone should feel sorry for a white, middle-aged American man with white, middle-aged American sorrows. This professional mediocrity parallels Les's personal insecurities. Just as he fears he's not special enough as a writer, he worries he's not special enough as a person to deserve lasting love. The rejection of his manuscript coincides with Freddie's wedding plans, creating a perfect storm of inadequacy that sends him fleeing around the world. Yet throughout his journey, Les experiences moments of unexpected validation. Mohammed, his Moroccan guide, reveals he's read Calypso in French. Louisa in Italy compliments his work, comparing it to Joyce in Outer Space. Most surprisingly, Les wins the Italian Literary Prize over more obviously accomplished competitors, including the miserable Foster's Lancet. The turning point comes in Morocco when Les has an epiphany about his novel's protagonist, Swift. Rather than seeing him as a tragic hero deserving of sympathy, Les realizes Swift is actually a fool, and his novel isn't a sad story of middle-aged regret, but a comedy. This shift in perspective allows Les to transform his rejected manuscript during his convalescence in India, inverting tragic events into comic ones, and finding joy in humiliating his protagonist until, unexpectedly, a bittersweet longing emerges, and he begins to love his subject again. Carlos later articulates what Les is slowly discovering. You have the luck of a comedian. Bad luck in things that don't matter, good luck in things that do. I think your whole life is a comedy. You've bumbled through every moment and been a fool. You've misunderstood and misspoken and tripped over absolutely everything and everyone in your path. And you've won. This reframing of mediocrity as comedy rather than tragedy offers Les a path towards self-acceptance. Perhaps being extraordinary was never the point. Perhaps there's beauty and meaning in being perfectly, comically ordinary. Arthur Les's journey becomes a masterclass in miscommunication as he navigates foreign languages and cultures with endearing ineptitude. Despite his confidence in his German skills, Les commits linguistic atrocities throughout his Berlin stay. Male friends become female, and he accidentally suggests he's entering prostitution rather than drawing conclusions. His German is bruised with errors, yet he remains convinced of his fluency, vowing not to speak a word of English during his stay. At the liberated university, he introduces himself with, "Six greetings, class," and announces, "I am your Mr. Professor," unaware he's promoted himself far beyond his actual rank. Though his students likely learn nothing about literature, they rediscover their love of language through his playful methods, cutting up Lolita and Joyce, translating and retranslating Carson McCullers until sentences become playground gibberish. In Mexico City, Les participates in a chili tasting contest where he innocently compares a relish to his grandmother's chow chow, unknowingly using a phrase that's a vulgar false cognate in Spanish, causing Mexican writers to erupt in laughter. In Italy, he misinterprets SRSS on a driver's sign as his own name, panicking when they drive for an hour through countryside vineyards before realizing the resort is actually his intended destination. These linguistic mishaps mirror Les's broader inability to accurately read his own life. Just as he misinterprets foreign phrases, he misreads relationships and opportunities. His conversation with Zoha in Morocco reveals this parallel when she asks, "What is love, Arthur?" And he has no answer. Is it the good dear thing I had with Janet for 8 years? Or is it the lightning bolt, the destructive madness that hit my girl? The theme reaches its apex in Japan when Les, attempting to leave a 400-year-old restaurant, discovers the door is stuck. The staff suggest he break through the paper wall. Facing this final absurdity, Les stands before the blank white wall of his future and, with unexpected pleasure, brings his fists down with a splintering noise. This literal breakthrough becomes metaphorical. By breaking through barriers of misunderstanding, Les finally begins to see his life clearly. Throughout his journey, Les gradually realizes that misunderstanding isn't always a failure. Sometimes it's the necessary first step toward deeper comprehension. As Mohammed tells him in Morocco, "I think you have been getting the world wrong." This revelation that Les has fundamentally misinterpreted his experiences becomes the key to his transformation. Each destination on Les's itinerary becomes a landscape of emotional reckoning, with physical locations mirroring his internal journey. New York represents the beginning of his escape, where he sits primly holding a Russian cosmonaut's helmet while waiting for an escort who believes him to be a woman named Miss Arthur. The city embodies his initial disorientation and the absurdity of his flight from reality. Mexico City confronts Les with memories he's long suppressed, his early romance with Robert Brownburn 30 years earlier, when they drove recklessly from California in Brownburn's BMW for a drug-hazed weekend in Ensenada. His habitual denial of ever visiting Mexico reveals his pattern of rewriting painful history. More significantly, Mexico forces him to face Marion Brownburn's ghost, Robert's ex-wife, whom he hasn't seen in 30 years, the woman whose husband he essentially took. Though she ultimately doesn't appear due to a broken hip, the anticipation forces Les to confront his role in their triangle. Turin brings unexpected triumph when Les wins a literary prize, challenging his self-perception as mediocre. Berlin offers temporary liberation through its vibrant nightlife, where even old American writers are dancing like it is still the 80s in San Francisco, and everyone, even Arthur Les, is loved. Yet this freedom proves fleeting, leaving him with a hangover and the same unresolved questions. Paris presents the most poignant geography, the road not taken. His connection with Javier on a rooftop overlooking the city represents a potential alternate life that Les ultimately walks away from. Their kiss against the stone wall becomes a moment suspended in time, with Les never saying the words that would change everything, "Ask me, and I will stay." The Moroccan desert strips Les to his essence as he contemplates turning 50 alone. While India forces physical stillness through injury, creating space for creative breakthrough. The Ryokan in Kyoto, with its garden identical to the miniature one from his childhood, brings Les full circle emotionally, triggering tears of recognition. This geographic journey culminates in Les's return to San Francisco, climbing the Vulcan steps toward home. The city is washed in blue fog as he makes his way up the dark passage. Though he's without his suitcase, he wears his beautiful gray tailored suit, a symbol of his transformation. As he approaches his house and sees a silhouette waiting, the physical journey ends where the emotional journey began, at home, with the possibility of love that he's been fleeing all along. Through this global circuit, Les discovers that no matter how far he travels, he cannot escape himself. Each location offers not escape, but confrontation with different aspects of his identity. The geography of heartache ultimately leads back to the heart itself. Arthur Les approaches 50 with the dread of someone facing execution. Having lost most of his generation to AIDS, he feels like the first homosexual ever to grow old and lacks models for how to age as a gay man. Should he cling desperately to youth or embrace dignified maturity? Should he continue pursuing romance, take casual lovers, or accept solitude? Physical signs of aging haunt him. His washed-out blonde hair, watery blue eyes, and perpetually sunburned nose. When teenagers stare at him swimming laps in Turin, he feels acutely self-conscious about his middle-aged body. In Berlin, he's mistaken for Peter Pan on the dance floor, a nickname that captures his arrested development. Les's 50th birthday looms throughout his journey like an approaching storm. "It's like the last day in a foreign country," he explains to Javier in Paris. You finally figure out where to get coffee and drinks and a good steak, and then you have to leave, and you won't ever be back. This metaphor captures his sense that youth's lessons arrive too late to be useful. Zohra offers contrasting wisdom about turning 50. First, fuck love. Give it up. Romance isn't safe at our age. Second, get fat, like Lewis. When Les protests that happiness is possible, she drunkenly declares, "Happiness is bullshit. That is the wisdom I give you from my 22 hours of being 50. Yet other perspectives emerge. Lewis explains that ending his 20-year marriage to Clark isn't failure, but success. 20 years of joy and support and friendship, that's a success. Is the sun a failure because it's going to end in a billion years? No, it's the fucking sun. This reframes aging not as decline, but as natural evolution. Most significantly, Robert Brownburn offers perspective from further along life's path. Despite his stroke and diminished condition, Robert tells Les that 50 shouldn't worry him. 50 is nothing. I look back at 50 and think, what the fuck was I so worried about? This glimpse from the other side of the milestone Les fears offers liberation from his anxiety. The comedy of aging reaches its apex when Les sees himself in a mirror in Morocco, beside Muhammad, looking exactly like my father. This moment of recognition that he has become what he once viewed as impossibly old triggers not despair, but revelation. Standing on his hotel balcony with champagne, Les whispers, "Happy birthday, Arthur Les," to the night air, adding, "And just for the record, happiness is not bullshit." Through this journey, Les discovers that aging isn't tragedy, but comedy, full of misunderstandings, physical indignities, and unexpected joys. By embracing the humor in growing older rather than fighting against it, he finds a path toward acceptance that neither denies age nor surrenders to it. Arthur Les's global circumnavigation ultimately leads him back where he began, but with transformed perspective. After breaking through the paper wall in Japan, he completes his journey home to San Francisco, arriving at the bottom of the Vulcan steps without his suitcase, but wearing his beautiful gray tailored suit. The city is washed in blue fog as he makes his way up the dark passage toward home. What awaits him is the novel's final revelation, the identity of the narrator who has been telling Les's story all along. Freddie Pelu, Les's former lover, has returned from a failed one-day marriage to Tom Dennis. The wedding Les fled attending has itself collapsed, and Freddie has been waiting on his porch. As Arthur reaches the top of the stairs and recognizes the silhouette, Freddie calls out, "Les," answering his own question about what he truly wants from life. This homecoming reveals the journey's ultimate irony. Les traveled the world to escape what was actually his heart's desire. While fleeing what he perceived as rejection, he missed seeing that he was already loved. Carlos had tried to tell him, "You have the best life of anyone I know," but Les couldn't comprehend what he meant until this moment of return. The circular nature of Les's journey reflects the novel's deeper wisdom about self-discovery. Sometimes we must travel thousands of miles to recognize what's been waiting at our doorstep. Sometimes we must experience profound loneliness to appreciate connection. Sometimes we must face our worst fears about aging and mediocrity to discover they were never the threats we imagined. Les returns home physically transformed, without his beard, temporarily without his suitcase, but wearing the beautiful suit that survived his adventures. More importantly, he returns emotionally transformed, having confronted his fears about aging, his insecurities about his writing, and his doubts about love's possibility. Through comedy and mishap, through linguistic confusion and cultural disorientation, Les has discovered that his ordinary life contains extraordinary value. The journey that began with fleeing a wedding invitation ends with the possibility of genuine connection. The man who felt like a person without skin discovers that vulnerability isn't weakness, but strength. The writer who feared mediocrity realizes that his unique perspective has value precisely because it's his own. and the approaching 50 gay man who lacked models for aging finds that he can write his own script for this next chapter. In returning home, Les discovers he never truly lost what mattered most, the capacity for love, for creativity, and for finding joy in life's comedy. As Freddie calls out his name from the porch, we understand that sometimes the most extraordinary journey is the one that leads us back to ourselves.